moving in your hands as quick as a bunny. When I see the coins, you show me the money. A penny, as quick as a bunny. Show me, show me, show me the money.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard every Saturday, 12.05 p.m. And we're going to be asking, show me the money. Show me the money, except it's not the money talked about in the song. It's not the nickel dime quarter. It's Bitcoin. And actually, you really can't show me the money. But it exists, and it's gaining value, and it's gaining acceptance. And in just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with the Chief Technical Officer, Leonard Lopin, of Byte Federal, who and his co-workers and company are placing Bitcoin ATMs all around Florida and soon beyond, if they're not already beyond Florida. And you can find one right down the street from the station here in Bradenton, Florida. We'll tell you about that. We'll speak to someone later in the show that actually has used them and watched other people use them. And we're going to explore cryptocurrencies, this whole new world of money that's out there waiting to be discovered by you and by us. But there's a lot of pioneers and advanced people on all this. To start out, we're going to play a little bit here about what is Bitcoin. There's much more than Bitcoin now, though. I first heard about that probably about 7 years ago. I think it's been around about 8 years or 9 years. We'll find out more about the history in just a moment when we speak with Leonard. And about 5 years ago, Augie and I did a show about Bitcoin where our guest was Mark Edge from Free Talk Live. And we still didn't know how to get Bitcoin then. Well, I've got Bitcoin or Litecoin or Ethereum or who knows what sitting in the app in my wallet right now. But let's just get right to it. And what is Bitcoin?
Bitcoin is one unit of digital currency. It's internet money. Unlike dollars or euros or yen, Bitcoin is considered a decentralized currency. That means that a network of users control and verify transactions instead of a central authority like a bank or a government. It still works like real money. One person pays another person for goods and services. However, once money is exchanged, the record of the transaction is publicly recorded onto a ledger known as a blockchain. Other Bitcoin users, known as miners, verify the transactions in the blockchain. After a certain amount of transactions have been verified by a miner, that miner will receive newly minted Bitcoins for their work, and thus, new Bitcoins will be added into circulation. While there are currently more than 12 million Bitcoins in circulation, the total amount of Bitcoins that can ever be created is capped at 21 million. The creation rate is automatically halved every few years as more Bitcoins are added into circulation. This system, modeled after gold mining, makes finding new Bitcoins more rare as the number of available Bitcoins reaches the 21 million cap. So, should you rush out and start converting all your money to Bitcoins? Not necessarily. While a few websites such as Reddit, WordPress, and Overstock have begun accepting Bitcoins, most major retailers have yet to take the plunge. Also, like any other commodity, the value of Bitcoin is only worth what people are willing to pay for it, and that value has fluctuated pretty wildly in the past couple of years. In April of 2011, the value of one Bitcoin was 75 cents. In December of 2013, that value reached as high as $1,200.
Well, obviously that is a little bit dated, and if you're like me, and most of you aren't like me, I first started hearing about this, as I said, 7 years ago, and I don't know that that really would have given you a total sense of it, but it gets you familiar with a few of the words as we go to our guest here. He is the Chief Technical Officer of Byte Federal, who is, I said before, placing Bitcoin ATMs around the area. He is Leonard Lopin. Good afternoon, Leonard. Thank you for joining.
Hi, yeah. Hi, yeah. Thanks for having me.
And so, first off, Leonard, what the audio's trying to explain Bitcoin, but tell us what you, your perception of Bitcoin is, how you came to know about it.
Well, I came to know about Bitcoin, I think, in 2011, late 2011, which puts me in year three of Bitcoin. Actually, I missed it, just like you, in the beginning, but following some tech news, eventually I came across it. And we had a discussion at our office at the time, and everybody was thinking, like, this must be a scam. You know, it must be a kind of one of these internet Ponzi schemes. But the technical paper was quite intriguing and fascinating. There was a lot of innovation in it. And so we started participating initially as miners. So the process that was just described, where transactions get verified, anybody could join the network at that point and basically become like the data center of a bank. Right?
Okay, well, we're moving a little bit fast.
Okay.
Let me get a little bit more of your background for the audience. Now, you're an engineer by profession?
Yeah, I'm a software engineer by profession. Went to university in Germany. Came here in 2007 to the United States.
Now, to an old guy, to me, you just look young. So, but how long have you been a professional engineer?
Since 2003.
Okay. So I'm guessing if that's when you came out of college?
Right, correct.
Okay, so you're probably in your early 30s.
In my late 30s, believe it or not.
Yeah. Whatever you say, I believe. We're at a level here of technical expertise. You can tell me anything, and I'll believe it. You can tell me there's little mice that are pooping out bitcoins, and I'll believe you. Deep in the computer. Anyway, so there's something unique about the way the programming of Bitcoin works as opposed to programming that had been doing probably when you went into college, right?
Yes. So the main fundamental thing I think to understand is that Bitcoin is a digital currency or digital money that doesn't need a third party to authorize it or verify it. It's really between individuals, a peer-to-peer network. So I can give you money, just like I can give you a bill of paper and say, here's
the
dollar.
I'm going to slow you down a lot here, Leonard. So that by third party, do you mean the bank or the government or both?
Anybody. So if you think of PayPal, PayPal, at least in the beginning, wasn't really a bank, right? It was just a service that would verify that I would take $10 out of my bank account and send it to you. And so you still had to have a third party that works like an escrow. Or some kind of authority that both parties would trust in this transaction to occur. And the Bitcoin revolution, if you will, is that that's replaced by a network very much like file sharing works. Everybody can see everybody's transaction, and by this absolute transparency, nobody can cheat. And to put that into code and actually make it work, that was quite quite the task.
Would I be too far out of the metaphor, allegory, simile, whatever it is? Obviously, I'm not an English major either. If I had a dollar bill right here between us, and that dollar bill could tell us everything it ever bought in the history of its existence, is that like a Bitcoin?
Yeah, very much so. And the Bitcoin has to do that in order for this distributed, trustless network to work, right? That's just one of the fundamental cores.
Let me ask you another question then on that same line. Okay, so the audience followed us right then where this dollar bill that they're holding in their hands, they can tell everything that dollar ever bought. Does the dollar that's in the other person's hands over there, does that dollar know what the other dollar bought?
No, it doesn't quite then work like that. Everybody is basically behind, it's called sometimes a pseudonymous system, where everybody's behind an encrypted address. So unless you tell everybody, hey, this is my bank account, this is my number, and then I can establish your identity with a particular Bitcoin address, at that point I can see a trail of transactions, you know, coming through your address. But if you don't, you know, you don't have to share that piece of information, at that point the flow of money just is between individuals on the internet, very much like data packages. You can't really tell, you know, with what servers they're going through. They're just going through random addresses, and those are just people behind it, or machines, or institutions behind it.
So some people listening to us might hear that, and when we get into the hundreds of other Bitcoin's just cryptocurrency.
Correct.
Just quick aside, cryptocurrency, it means...
It just means that it's a currency that really needs cryptographic technology to operate, to work.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. All right. So, but a lot of people just heard that description, and they're probably thinking, oh, well, criminals must love this because they can hide behind everything. But it's really the opposite, as
right.
I understand it. Because when that big story about 2 months ago with all the ransomware
right.
and they wanted to be paid in Bitcoin, as I understand it, you could have sent them the Bitcoin, but as soon as they bought something with it,
right.
they would have been traceable. Is that correct?
So exactly. So there's actually an ability for the police to do more forensics than they ever could do with cash. You know, but of course it would also need they have to study how the technology works and all of that. Another thing to understand is in the Western world, it's maybe a different story, but in many developing countries where the distinction between banks and governments and the crime syndicate is very loose. You know,
you haven't
like,
watched The Godfather in our country.
Right. Something like this is quite liberating. So, and the other thing too is, I think from a criminal perspective, whether it was the first car, the first phone, you know, the criminals always have to use cutting edge technology simply because they're in a very for them it's really hard, obviously, because society puts a lot of friction on their activities, and it's, you know, no surprise. Still, I think the majority of criminal activity happens actually with cash and not so much with Bitcoin.
I would agree with that, and not that I have any knowledge about that. All right, so we've got a general sense of the Bitcoin. We got a little bit less sense of the history, but it's the value of it has exploded against
right.
the dollar. I believe 7 years ago when I first heard about it, I think a Bitcoin was worth about $45. What's it worth now?
Right. So currently, it's actually, I just pulled up my phone, it's $2,532 in the U.S. And you could also make the case, eventually you could make the case, that the dollar is losing value against Bitcoin. Because one of the fundamental distinctions is that most of these cryptocurrencies, besides Bitcoin, they have a cap, a maximum cap of Bitcoin that can ever be generated. Unlike the dollar, which gets inflated on a regular basis, usually by the national governments. The Bitcoin is
printing money. People commonly
exactly. So you have the taxing from the top and the inflation from the bottom. That's how the citizen gets robbed. Basically, it's, you know, both ways. And Bitcoin.
You've got a libertarian bent.
Do I?
Yeah.
Does it come across? Well, and so the fascinating thing is, and especially, you know, in the U.S. and let's say in Germany and in Europe, it's not such a big issue. But in a lot of developing countries, that's a really big deal. You know, from 1 month to another. If your family's survival depends on the value, the storage of your monetary assets, then it's quite important.
We're speaking with Leonard Lopen. He is the chief technical officer, if you couldn't already guess, that might be his profession, for Byte Federal. Their website is bytefederal.com, and it's spelled B-Y-T-E, federal.com. For those of you that went to public school, that's B-Y-T-E-F-E-D-E-R-A-L.com. And they are placing Bitcoin ATMs all around Florida and beyond. Are you beyond Florida?
Almost.
All right. What's your farthest one? Where did you originate? Where was the first one placed?
The first one was placed in Bradenton, actually, here down the street.
It's actually at the Shell station near 34th Street and Cortez
correct.
Road, if for those of you that know Bradenton. Yeah. Then where did you go, Sarasota?
We went to Sarasota next, Clark Road, Honoré Clark. And started expanding southwards, Englewood, and then north, St. Petersburg, Tampa area.
What's your farthest one away?
Currently, Miami. We have one in Miami. But we're hoping to, you know, place them in all major.
And we're going to find out more about the ATMs themselves that Byte Federal is placing. Again, that's bytefederal.com, and they're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. There's lots of ways to communicate with them. And Leonard Lopen was just talking about less developed countries, less developed economies. And I think there's actually a testimonial on the website from someone in Venezuela,
yes.
which is just in economic turmoil, and they were able to help out a family member.
Right. We do have quite a number of people coming from Venezuela to us who live overseas, and everybody knows what's going on there, I guess, at this point. And Bitcoin really is a big thing for them. So they used to send back money through Western Union, high fees, you know, the remittances are getting chopped there, and instead they use Bitcoin, they can directly send it to their family members and then convert it over there. It just takes a couple of seconds and the money is there.
Now, I'm looking at Leonard's phone, and he has the same app on his phone that is the primary one that I am now in the habit of looking at every, I don't know, not that often, like every 50, 60 seconds. It's just sort of fascinating.
It is more often than me.
At least know, if I was looking at my Facebook timeline every 50 or 60 seconds, I would know I have a problem. But this, I'm just trying to be aware of what's going on in the world. So anyway, but the thing is about this Coinbase app, it does Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Litecoin, and you can either buy with a credit card or a debit card, but they also have something called a U.S. dollar wallet, and I imagine they have other currencies depending on what country you're in. So if I have X dollars in the wallet and I buy Bitcoin and then I put my phone in my pocket and I travel across a border, is there a limit to how much money I can have on my phone?
No, in theory it's not, and it's quite interesting how we think about money and transporting money. But obviously, as a digital currency, you didn't even need a phone. In theory, you could just send your Bitcoin to a Bitcoin address, which is works like a bank account, but it's really just a long PIN that you remember.
Where are these at?
They are in the internet. They're nowhere and everywhere. Every computer who has a copy of this public ledger that's called the blockchain and participates in the network has access to your account, but can't access it without that PIN, which is a very, very long PIN and harder encrypted than your regular bank account. So you could just memorize that PIN, travel to Japan, and wherever Bitcoin is accepted, punch in that PIN and basically get your Bitcoin out.
And when you say a Bitcoin address, is it similar to the way we have website addresses?
Yeah, like website addresses or bank account numbers, that kind of stuff, right?
Because I really don't know where this website is that I'm looking at on my computer. It's just an image.
No, it's just really, you have to think more of it like a public ledger. If you really think about QuickBooks or some kind of accounting document, they have a database, right, at the end where all of your transactions are stored. And these transactions, every transaction that happens is attached to a certain number, if you will, right? And an individual basically has one or multiple accounts, and you can set up a Bitcoin account, like if you download any Bitcoin app within seconds, it's really easy to do. Even a child, could do it. And so without any precursor, you generate your own banking account as easily as you would set up an email account, or even easier.
Now, I couldn't just move dollars to the Great Britain.
Right, that would be tough, right? It's not so easy.
Yeah. Is there anything... Like I was trying to tell a friend of mine, and maybe you'll correct me. It's like I could walk across the border with $1 million in my pocket.
And there's some good insight. I usually bring this up. I have friends in Sri Lanka. I spend some time in Asia. And one of the first problems I had, they're like, could you send me $120? And I'm like, yeah, sure, no problem. How do I do this? This was in 2005, 2006. So I thought, well, PayPal probably does that, right? So go to PayPal, and they say, oh, sorry, this country is blocked. I'm like, what are we going to do now? So I walked to the bank, and $50 in fees, and 3 hours later, I sent them $120, right? It's kind of a nightmare. And a couple of years later with Bitcoin, they said, yeah, of course, we have Bitcoin too. So, it takes me 5 seconds, and I send them
$100. So now people are out there listening going, what about terrorism?
Right. Yeah. And so it doesn't, of course, take away from police work that's necessary, right? You just can't say we can't police it anymore. We can't do our job. Sure. No, the police has to do their job. They have to follow their leads and trails. And now when they discover a computer, of course, they have to start looking for Bitcoin. Right.
We've had some changes in the phone numbers here at the stations from the longtime numbers of the station. So I'm going to give these out if anybody's listening and wants to call in and ask a question about this. The main number, and this is going to be hit and miss, I'm warning people that are calling, so be patient as you call in if you're attempting to call in. 888-761-1490. That's 888-761-1490. There's also a second line, which is 941-761-8703. So there's a 941-761-8703, and there's a 888-761-1490 if you want to give those a try. And we're just going to take a quick musical interlude here for a second because we are, as I will do a little self-promotion here, the podcast will be up at henryrainshow.podomatic.com. That's henryrainshow.podomatic.com. And we will also, you can find the show on Twitter at Henry Rain Show, Facebook also at Henry Rain Show. And just a few seconds, we'll be back with Leonard Lopin from Byte Federal.
How much is a penny? How much is a nickel? How much is a dime? How much is a quarter? A penny is one, a nickel is five, a dime is 10, and a quarter is 25. How much is a penny? How much is a nickel? How much is a dime? How much is a quarter? A penny is one, a nickel is five, a dime is 10, and a quarter is 25. How much is a penny?